DW Deutsche Welle. Living Planet.
From DW Studios in Bonn, this is Living Planet, and I'm Charlotte Lomas. In just a few weeks, the next International Climate Conference will take place here in Bonn. Government representatives and policymakers from around the world will gather to discuss the next steps for the Paris Accord, an international pact to limit global warming to below 2 degrees Celsius. Experts say we have just 3 years to stop the worst effects of climate change, but we have to curb emissions now. Ahead of the conference, we'll be delving into some of the key issues that contribute to global warming, and we'll explore some of the solutions. Stay tuned. Agriculture is one of the major contributors to global warming. It accounts for about a quarter of greenhouse gas emissions. So what we eat is just as important as the type of car we drive or the energy we use to power our home. 11% of the Earth's surface is used for crop production. But when we clear land for agriculture, to rear livestock or to produce things like palm oil, coffee or tea, we also produce emissions.
When agriculture is practiced, particularly when new lands are what we call broken for cultivation, the organic matter that they contain in their soils is often subjected to microbial decomposition, and that puts carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
That's William Schlesinger, President Emeritus of the Carey Institute of Ecosystem Studies in New York. Clearing land for agriculture is one of the biggest drivers of deforestation. Forests cover some 30% of the world's land surface, and when trees are felled, the CO2 or carbon dioxide they store also gets released.
So with deforestation, you're in the business of cutting down trees and often burning them or burning the products from trees over a short period of time. And that puts the carbon that those trees contain into the atmosphere as carbon dioxide.
But unfortunately, CO2 isn't the only culprit.
With agriculture, it's a very diffuse source of emissions. Some is coming from soils, some from cows, some from fertilizer, but all these are spread across the landscape, and it's very difficult to think about any kind of collection and capturing of those emissions when they're so diffuse. Certainly, carbon dioxide from agriculture is the largest contributor of agricultural activities to climate change, probably followed by methane and followed by nitrous oxide.
And as the global population continues to grow, so too does our demand for food. So how then do we meet this demand and at the same time reduce our emissions?
So I think it's going to be hard to grow food for the current 7 billion people on the planet, perhaps growing to 10 or 12 billion by mid-century, without some disturbance of soils. If you want people to be well-fed, you're going to have agriculture. It will have to be reasonably intensive agriculture to provide that much food, and that's going to release carbon dioxide from soils. This is why it's particularly important to manage other kinds of lands to take up carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, to essentially balance what is being released from agricultural activities.
Schlesinger is the co-author of a report published this week in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. The report finds that better land use practices could help reduce emissions, and agriculture is key. It calls for smarter techniques for using chemical fertilizers like nitrous oxide and better management of methane-emitting livestock. But it also stresses the need to use nature to tackle climate change, such as restoring forests and planting trees, which play a critical role in absorbing CO2.
Well, the biggest potential places to store or sequester carbon, what we call carbon sinks, involve better management of forests and better management of wetlands. So not deforesting currently mature and old-growth forests, replanting forests on land that may have been cut previously and maybe even is degraded, and better management of existing forests that are being used for wood products. All of those could make an enormous difference on carbon dioxide, lowering carbon dioxide releases and increasing carbon storage.
And Schlesinger says that if adopted, natural climate solutions could go a long way in achieving the goals of the Paris Accord.
So the full suite of natural climate solutions that the paper in Proceedings of the National Academy identified, if all of them were implemented, could contribute about a third, maybe even 37% was the number the paper quoted, of the necessary greenhouse gas emissions needed for the Paris Agreement. That's globally. Some countries would contribute more to that than others, and reductions in some greenhouse gases would be more feasible in some places than others. About a quarter of that 37% is thought to be possible from better agricultural activities.
That was William Schlesinger, co-author of a report published this week in the journal Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. As we just heard, more sustainable farming practices could help tackle climate change. Well, in Costa Rica, coffee production makes up 9% of the country's greenhouse gas emissions. Fertilisers, especially nitrogen-based fertilisers, release the most emissions. But now farmers are learning more eco-friendly techniques with the help of Germany's GIZ Development Agency. Transforming the coffee sector, they hope, will help Costa Rica reach its goal of becoming climate neutral by 2021. Neil King presents this report by Katja Dörner.
Leaning over a row of four cups of steaming coffee, a lab technician breathes in the fragrant aroma of a fresh brew before spooning out a sample and swishing it across his taste buds. Satisfied, he spits it out into a travel mug before reaching for the next cup. In this stark, brightly lit lab at the Costa Rica Coffee Institute, or eCafe, scientists subject the country's famed export to extensive quality control testing. They're also working to further improve the coffee and make it more climate-friendly. Farmers send samples of ailing plants to the institute, where scientists look for efficient treatments, such as more ecologically sound fertilizers. On nearby test fields, new types of plants are developed and grown in long rows. Emilia Acosta, a young woman who works with Germany's GIZ Development Agency, points out a promising new plant from Brazil with an unusually large number of small, tightly packed green beans.
Esto son plantaciones de tres años. Esto es toda la cosecha que tiene.
These are the three-year-old plants. This is the entire harvest. This isn't normal for one of our traditional plants. Usually they need longer to produce so many coffee beans. And the leaves are bigger, nearly double the size of traditional leaves. And they're very tough. That helps deter fungus infections from developing quickly.
Acosta's job is to introduce farmers to the improved ecological practices.
Besides using these plants, they also need to change how they cultivate them. They have to increase the distance between the plants, change the fertilizer, and provide more shade. Those are big changes. Most start with small steps. The project is quite innovative. No one else is doing it yet. We hope that the production methods will allow coffee farmers to market their product as something unique, unlike any other coffee in the world.
Acosta regularly travels to coffee plantations, visiting with farmers and leading workshops teaching new climate-friendly production methods. Today, she's meeting a group of local coffee growers at a smaller plantation in Orosi, in central Costa Rica. Coffee farmer Cecilia Genes understands the need for these new methods. She explains that this year the harvest was already well underway during the rainy season, 3 months early.
We're well aware of climate change. We didn't used to start harvesting until September. This year it was June. That's incredible.
As a young farmer straps on a fertilizer spreader, a backpack with a blue and orange canister attached to a hose, Acosta says if they learn to spray more efficiently, they will produce less damaging greenhouse gases. Most emissions come from fertilizer, especially nitrogen fertilizer. Today, they're practicing with water to learn proper dosages and how to cover a hectare of coffee plants most efficiently.
Café, café.
Later on, the farmers gather in the shade of a large tree along the edge of the coffee field. An instructor explains how they can keep CO2 emissions low by planting large shade trees around their crops.
50% del tronco, más o menos, es puro carbono.
This trunk contains about 50% carbon, and the tree is constantly growing through the process of photosynthesis. That means it absorbs carbon from the atmosphere through its leaves in the form of CO2. As it grows year after year, it absorbs more and more carbon. Some trees absorb more than others. The ones with dense wood are best.
Acosta says the farmers are sometimes hesitant to try the new techniques, but are ready to learn.
The coffee farmers are always curious and want to know more and more. Sometimes they're skeptical of new methods, but they're willing to try. They say, maybe in that small corner over there, I'll try it and see if it works. And so, step by step, they're learning by doing. And then they go to a neighbor and say, look what I've done. I didn't think it would work, but it's super.
Mira, hice esto y pensé que no iba a funcionar, pero está funcionando súper bien, entonces qué chiva.
Oscar Chacon has been an organic coffee farmer for many years. On a walk through his dense coffee field, he shows off the lush, dark green plants with a big smile.
No siente orgulloso.
You feel proud when your plants look like this. When a coffee producer sees such plants, he's happy.
Se siente feliz.
He bends over and scoops up a handful of dark, rich soil. Because of the many shade trees and weeds, the ground has become more fertile.
Estos son hongos. Son microorganismos.
These are fungi and microorganisms, organic materials that break down and decay. It comes from leaves that fall from the trees. They contain calcium, magnesium, and other materials. That means the land nourishes itself with the organic material.
Chacon has been using environmentally friendly practices for years now. It's hoped that within 2 years, an additional 6,000 coffee farmers will join him. That would bring Costa Rica one step closer to its goal of being carbon neutral by 2021.
Neil King presented that report by Katja Dörner. From coffee to cows. Sure, they're not the first thing to come to mind when we think of global warming. But one cow contributes as much as between 600 and 800 litres of methane a day, a gas way more potent than carbon dioxide. India is the world's largest milk-producing country and the third biggest exporter of beef. But now some Indian farmers are doing their part to get their cows to burp and fart less. Yasvinder Sehgal has more from Rajasthan, India.
Kota is the world's seventh most densely populated city, located in the northern Indian state of Rajasthan. It's also home to some rather unusual residents. At an organic dairy farm in the Chambal industrial area of Kota, cows are said to fart and burp less than cows in the rest of the country. The farm is named Gau and it spreads over 40 acres and has some 130 cattle. It's lunchtime for the cows, and on the menu is finely chopped green grass and sprouts of maize grown using hydroponics, a technique of growing plants with water but without soil. Each cow stands with its face fixed in the iron gate, which controls the amount of food they can eat.
So, this is a new thing which we have done.
27-year-old Amanpreet Singh is the farm's manager. He's keeping a close watch on the feeding. He says that the fodder given to the cows is organic. He adds that normally a cow releases between 600 to 800 liters of methane a day. But with his balanced feed, the emissions are much lower.
We have reduced the whole gaseous emission of methane by around 60 to 70% just by sparing the extra feed. So we are up right now on the loosened grass. We are operating on the makhan grass. We are now equipped with a system of hydroponics farming. So it is very high in nutrition. The natural system, the natural feed only.
Amanpreet has designed a native hydroponics unit, a temperature and humidity controlled chamber covered with hessian sacks. A few iron stands hold trays of maize seeds which float in mineral nutrient water solutions.
10 square meter by 10 square meter is the space which we are using right now. Second, we are having the efficiency of 250 to 300 kgs per day. And after every 7 days, we get a production out of it. We have made the system in approximately 1900 euros, and which is being already supplied by many big companies in 27 or 28,000 euros.
Amanpreet says that generally the amount of methane a cow produces annually is equivalent to 4 tons of CO2. But with their special hydroponically grown feed, the cattle release less methane. Scientists are now able to determine the amount of methane emitted by livestock by releasing a tracer gas called sulfur hexafluoride and measuring samples collected from around the nose and mouth of the cows using a gas chromatograph. Dr. Seema Midha is an animal nutritionist who works at Rajasthan Livestock Nutrition Lab.
Feeding the distillery effluents to the livestock reduces the methane emission. The usage of oilseed cakes and a few Indian herbs also cut down in methane levels. Actually, they block the availability of hydrogen for microbes living in the gut of the livestock so as to restrict the union of carbon and hydrogen into the methane.
It's bath time for another group of cows. Before milking them, the farmers make sure each cow is clean. 29-year-old Sumandeep Kaur is responsible for the health of the cows.
Our cows do have pedometers in their feet, which consist of a radio frequency number. So when the cows come for milking at the milking station, I could monitor their health, their daily eat. We do have a software in which we had entered all the details of our cows, calves and heifers. I also comes to know like which cows are pending for insemination, which we need to dry according to their less yield, and which cows are gonna calve in next few days.
Prevention, she says, is better than cure. Elsewhere on the farm, cow dung and urine are used to produce electricity, gas, compost and dung cakes. Amanpreet says the farm has a biogas plant which operates entirely on cow dung, generating 40 kilowatts of electricity per day.
We have made this hybrid generator by putting the good source of methane into it. Every single power source is right now running on the cow dung only. How it is happening? By methane only. So again, we are not liberating the methane in the atmosphere. So we are using it for our own use only.
No amount of cow dung or urine is wasted at this farm. Forty-five-year-old Giriraj Sharma is treating the leftover sludge so it can be used as compost.
The leftover cow dung and urine, along with food waste and other materials, is mixed together with earthworms, creating a nutrient-rich organic fertilizer, which makes a very good manure for all plants, fruits, crops, and vegetables.
Two motorcycle couriers have just returned from delivering cow dung cakes, which were purchased online.
Paneer, ghee, doodh, dahi.
31-year-old courier Ram Babu Sharma explains how the semi-liquid cow dung is first dried, dyed, and then heated. The cakes are then carefully packed in cardboard boxes to prevent them from breaking after being dispatched. Every week, the farm packages between 500 and 1,000 cakes, which are delivered across India. The cakes sell for around 120 rupees or 1 euro 50 per dozen and are mostly purchased for religious purposes. Wow. 53-year-old Bhavani Singh has come to the farm to learn more about how the cow's waste can be used. He's among one of 10 farmers attending a workshop on cow dung management organized by the farm.
This is a very simple and efficient way to manage the cows and their byproducts. It doesn't require too much money or time and can be applied anywhere. I plan to educate the farmers in my village to adopt this model so they too can have healthy cows and a clean climate.
At a Hindu temple close to Goa farm, evening prayers and religious hymns are being recited. Yajna prayers are offered in front of a sacred fire burnt on a dry cow dung cake. The priest Pandit Ravi Shastri explains why the dung is so important.
Cow dung is God-given. When burned, it kills the mosquitoes and insects. Traditionally, cow dung has been used as a fertilizer, but today, dung is collected and used to produce biogas. If we feed greens and organic material to the cows, they release less methane. Our cows don't eat fatty acids and are not as big as Western cows, so the methane emissions are less.
Methane gas ka utsarjan adhik hota hai.
India is under pressure to cut its greenhouse gas emissions to meet the Paris climate goals set out in 2015. The farmers at Gao hope that their innovative efforts will play a role in combating the global issues of climate change. Jaswinder Sehgal, DWO, Rajasthan, India.
In Senegal, farmers have long used traditional techniques to read weather and predict rainfall, a vital element for a country where water can at times be scarce. But now, because of climate change, century-old techniques no longer work. Yields are suffering because of extreme weather patterns, putting the livelihoods of millions of rural households in danger. But a new technique has been developed, sending science-based climate information by text message to farmers across the country. Emmanuel Ande has more from Sikilo village in Senegal.
On the outskirts of Sikilo, some 250 kilometres southeast of the capital Dakar, rests a small village made up of concrete huts grouped together per family. Just a few hundred people live here. Aliou Njabi, the village chief, inspects his fields. He cultivates groundnuts and small seeded grasses or millet. Aliou, like many farmers across Senegal, is waiting for the monsoon season to start. The weather here can be a real curse, he says.
The weather is our bad luck. When cultivating, if you don't have the right information, then really you are farming blind. The most important factor for farmers is to have climate information.
Senegal's predominantly rain-fed agriculture is highly vulnerable to climate change as production depends largely on the amount of rainfall. Knowing when it will rain is key to calculating the risks of planting and harvesting certain crops. Traditionally, Senegalese farmers relied on indicators from their environment to predict the weather. This knowledge was passed down from one generation to the next. For 33-year-old farmer Maria Maketa, when the towering baobab tree at the entrance of her village sprouted leaves, that meant the rain would come, but not anymore.
It's changed a lot. Before we had a lot of rain, there were lots of trees. Now it's like this. There's little water, and so the farmers are forced to work with less water. It doesn't rain as much now.
Rainfall is rarer and more precious than ever, but there is hope. Sikilo's farmers now have modern technology at their fingertips to stand in for the natural signs that have been thrown off kilter by the changing climate. They rely on climate information sent via text message from the National Agency of Civil Aviation and Meteorology, known as ANACIM, based in Dakar. In 2010, Sikilo became the first so-called climate smart village in Senegal.
98% it is spot on. The messages can arrive at any time except in the dry season. The messages don't come as usual, but they go along the lines of forecast. There will be rain in the vicinity of Kaffrine in 2 hours. That's how we get the message.
To reach as many people as possible, ANACIM has partnered with a community radio network to broadcast weather information in French as well as local languages.
Mesdames, Messieurs, heureux de vous retrouver pour la page Météo La Côtière en collaboration avec l'ANACIM, l'Agence nationale.
Tala Diang is the president of the Community Radio Network for Senegal that groups 96 local radio stations.
L'ANACIM, ils ont appris aux animateurs comment interpréter le bulletin météo.
ANACIM taught our presenters how to translate the weather bulletin into local languages. Today, our radio network even gathers the climate data because ANACIM gave us rain gauges, taught the presenters how to read them, which we send back to them. Not only do we broadcast, but we gather climate information.
Today, next to seeds and fertilizer, simple mobile phones have become an important tool in building climate resilience. Following SMS weather forecasts instead of environmental indicators meant last year, Mariama's test plot yielded 1.5 tons more groundnuts than her other plot.
Since we've started following climate information, we've seen that the traditionally farmed plot is totally abnormal compared to the test plot. Every time we have a higher yield in our climate fields rather than our traditional fields.
And bigger harvests are vital to the country's food security. Experts project that by 2050, Senegal could see groundnut crops fall between 5 and 25%. Climate change is already having an impact. Over the last 10 years, ANACIM recorded lower rainfall in the Sahel region, says Ousmane Diaye, a climate researcher at ANACIM.
There are two things happening at the same time. There is an amount of rainfall which is going less and less. Onset, the starting of the season, are, you know, move a little bit later and later. Actually, in the 1950s, we used to have good rain. Let's say, let's take just in the middle, in what they call the peanut basins in the middle of Senegal. They used to have like 800 millimeters on average, like in the 1950s. In the 1970s, there was a big drought throughout the Sahel. And now the rainfall really decreased and they have 500 millimeters. So it's a huge, you know, decrease of the rainfall.
Emmanuel Landet for DW in Sikilo Village, Senegal.
And that's all we have time for on this week's show. Our program was produced with the help of Eliana Giaducci, Jürgen Kuhn and Martin Kubler. You can listen to Living Planet anytime on iTunes or SoundCloud, or find us on Facebook and Twitter at DW Environment. I'm Charlotta Lomas. Catch you next week.